You've been listening to the EECS podcast. You can find us on our website, www.qub.ac.uk/schools/EEECS. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at QUBEEECS. EECS, inventing tomorrow, today. Today I have Dr. Sandra Scott Hayward with me today, so thanks so much, Sandra, for taking the time.
My pleasure.
Sandra, could you tell me a little bit about your background in research, please?
Yes, so it's been a bit of a roundabout route to academia, actually. I originally studied aeronautical engineering, and I worked for Airbus in systems engineering and project management roles, and that was mainly in England and Germany. Then I went and spent a few years working for Amnesty International in campaigns and activism. And then I finally came back to university to study telecommunications. And that has led me into this current role where I am a lecturer in network security.
Fantastic. Well, it's a really interesting and quite diverse career.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. And I think it's one of those things. I think we're talking recently about, I know we're going to be talking about cybersecurity today, and we talk about the requirement to have people from diverse backgrounds in cybersecurity, and probably having come from an engineering, it's probably not so wildly remote from computer science topics, but it does demonstrate that you can come to security, cybersecurity, and indeed to academia at any stage in your career.
Absolutely. I think it's an interesting one whenever you see so many people coming from the same background. They tend to think the same way. So computer scientists think like computer scientists. So if you go through like a computer science route into, say, something like network security, your mindset will be shaped by that. Whereas if you come from media or law or some other area, the concerns and thoughts about that area will kind of influence your thinking. And so you definitely bring something different to the table whenever you're working in a team with people who are maybe more computer science centric.
Very much so. And it's something that we're really kind of crying out for in the cybersecurity community at the moment. We do, within Queen's, we have an interdisciplinary network between social sciences, law, and computer science and engineering schools. And that's trying to bring together those different aspects to address some of the real challenges that we have. Things like the idea of like how the attacker behaves in a certain scenario, or how might consider risk and all those developments. And so it's really important to bring together all the disciplines to tackle those challenges.
Absolutely. And I mean, we're kind of normally talking about cybersecurity and network security and networks. And I mean, most people are probably familiar with networks. You know, they have Wi-Fi in their house. They've used Wi-Fi or internet or network connections somewhere. Is that fairly representative of what we think of when you say network?
Yes. So as you mentioned, Wi-Fi networks and the internet, they're probably the two networks most people are familiar with. Mm-hmm. So with Wi-Fi, you're really talking about a wireless local area network. So that's sort of short range and at the edge of the network. Mm-hmm. So maybe, you know, connecting your device to the local access point in your home, that would maybe be a router. Yeah. But the router then connects on to other devices across the internet. So that's to connect, obviously, with the services and applications you want to access. So Wi-Fi is an example, or the wireless local area network is an example of a network. And across, you know, globally, then we have a massive network of networks.
Yeah. And they all kind of, they aim to connect. That's the thing. That's kind of the point of them.
That's exactly it. So you have different points. You have some that are working ad hoc, so where the devices themselves just create a network between themselves. And then you have, you know, point to point, where you have sort of a transition between networks, say at those router points. Mm-hmm. And the main thing that gets the whole thing working is a series of protocols. So within the different networks, you'd have a different way of devices communicating with each other. So the protocol is just the method that they exchange information. So how they understand each other, sort of handshakes and things. But yeah, they're all just different sizes and styles of network, depending on the device types and the communication type.
And we're seeing them everywhere. I mean, networks are in your house and school and work. I mean, even city centers will have Wi-Fi and networks and network devices. This kind of explosion of the number of networks, does that mean keeping them secure is more challenging?
It certainly is. I mean, the challenge is both the networks and then, as you mentioned, the devices that require them. Yeah. So from the devices perspective, I think most people probably now recognize the term Internet of Things. So yeah. Internet-enabled devices, you know, sometimes they're called smart devices, smart cameras, also down to your things like your fridges and smart locks even on your home. So the number of the devices and the networks between them, it's created sort of a bit of a chaos actually for network security.
Yeah.
So you used to be able to say in a network, say in a business environment, set up your network, the devices that you want, servers, computers, etc., add a firewall at the edge where you connect to the outside world, and then you're protected. And it's been a long time since that's been possible.
Yeah, it's no longer a closed loop. You can't control the inputs and outputs, because if you have things like wireless networking or random devices on your premises, you're not in control of that anymore.
Absolutely. Particularly so people bringing personal devices and running business applications on personal devices. So that introduces another avenue that you have no control over, unless you manage those. There's ways of managing those. So that kind of brings in, and you mentioned, you know, mobile wireless networks. We also have virtual networks now.
Yeah.
So you have virtual devices that can be hosted anywhere, but they might be part of your network, you know, where you're sitting in your office, you know, you're reaching out to that virtual device somewhere beyond your organization. So the real challenge is, where do we actually place the protection? We have no clean network borders. So where and how often?
Someone.
Yeah.
Because interestingly, our internet went down the other day in the house, and I noticed that because I have some smart devices in the house, whenever our router went down and disconnected, everything in the house, all the smart devices basically went haywire and broadcast their own network to try and reconnect. So on my laptop, when I tried to look at networks that were available, there was my home router, which was sort of rebooting, and then just a massive list of all these objects all around my house that were kind of going, where's the internet, where's the internet? And so the networking list had gone from one, which is my Wi-Fi, to maybe 15 different devices all throwing out their own little small personal Wi-Fi network to try and find the main one. And so it went from 1 to 100 very, very quickly.
You are a network security attacker's haven.
I need to
get in there.
And that's very true. I mean, a lot of people will, myself included apparently, will buy these smart devices and fill your home with interesting smart tech, which is very exciting, but it's not necessarily secure. And so do you have some common sense tips for maintaining that security when you're using networks, both in your own house, so say if you have smart devices, and also whenever you're out and about and you're interfacing with those other networks in other places?
Yeah, so I mean, firstly, I think if you talk about the smart devices in your own home, we also know, apart from, you know, being conscious of the IoT devices, we know sort of the vulnerabilities with them, that they're generally sort of small form factor. They don't have very advanced security settings or configurations, but they do have some. So the first thing you can always do is check on the device itself, that it's only, you know, check that you've set the security settings as recommended.
Yeah.
And if not, I mean, they're not always probably provided by they may not always be provided by the device provider, but you can find out information online generally about how best to do that. So, you know, you would want to be changing for the most basic thing, I suppose, is changing default passwords if there are passwords on those devices. So changing those so that it's not easy to access them. And the main reason for that is because we've talked about them being internet enabled, is that they are a real lure for a cyber attacker reaching out and just identifying open devices on the internet and then recruiting those to what we call botnets. To set up, they'll recruit them into this, well, it's a network of bots, the bot being the individual devices. And what they'll do is use those combined set massive volume of devices globally to run attacks, to run their own attacks. So the most common of those is to run a denial of service attack, a distributed denial of service attack. So if you have a device that you haven't changed the password on, an attacker can go and look online at what the standard passwords are for that particular device type. They'll just look by firmware or by equipment manufacturer. They can reach out, scan the network for the internet for those devices, and then access them and install some kind of malicious software on them to run whatever program they want at the time of their choosing. Best practice in terms of your own smart devices is to set, you know, configure them to the best level of security that you can, and ensure that they're not talking. If they don't actually need to be communicating externally from your home network, then you should configure them not to do that. If you go outside the home, then if we've talked back about the Wi-Fi network, so public Wi-Fi, for example, the real thing to remember there is that it's not secure. I think you probably talked on a previous podcast about cryptography, and the importance of that and the different approaches to that. So those public Wi-Fi networks don't have encryption running on them. So what that means is that you have anybody else on that same network can view whatever you're doing, should they wish to. So there are ways or tools that you can use to look at the traffic across the network and pull information from it. So the important thing to remember is to just acknowledge that there is a lack of security on those networks, so you avoid accessing sensitive services from them. For example, you shouldn't be doing your online banking over a public Wi-Fi network. What you can do too, if you do wish to, because I know they're so commonplace and we do require connectivity wherever we go, so we are tapping into whatever networks are around us. So I would always recommend using a VPN, so a virtual private network, and that can run, and basically it tunnels and encrypts your communication from your device to the destination, so to wherever you want to send it to. That sort of runs on top of whatever network then you're running, and you've created a secure pipe for your internet requests or what have you, out of your device to the destination. There are some things that you can do to lower the risk level, and to lower your exposure to attack. And it's the same as anything else. It's the same as sort of your home, I suppose. If you have an alarm system and your neighbor doesn't, then your neighbor is more likely to get broken into.
Yeah, I think it's being aware of that as well. I think the sort of speed at which technology develops is extremely fast. And so consumer products come out very, very quickly with exciting new opportunities. Like, you can monitor your doorbell from anywhere in the world. You can answer this. You can unlock your door, as you said earlier. And that's exciting. That's interesting. And people want that kind of functionality, but they're maybe not clued into the realities of the security issues that they're bringing up. You know, if you said, we'll cut the key for your front door, but we might share it with a few other people and they may also know where you live, you'd be like, no, thank you. But equally, if you have a smart lock on your door and you're like, if I don't configure this appropriately, it's effectively the same as someone else having the key to your house.
Yeah, absolutely. No, there's been some really nefarious uses of it, and some criminal activity around that. And related to that, there's research being done to explore, what are the vulnerabilities, what are the weaknesses, so that we can then propose solutions. But not only from a technical perspective, but also from the regulation and also the responsibility of equipment developers. I think just last month, there's been some progress in terms of setting out standards for the minimum level of security that an equipment manufacturer must apply to smart devices or smart products, on the back of having discovered some of these weaknesses. You mentioned the smart lock, and that having been used maybe in different kind of criminal activities.
And so that, we've talked about the change in technology, and I've mentioned the speed at which, consumer products especially change and adapt and sort of bring out new and exciting things. Does that mean you've seen sort of an equal change or an equal kind of pace of change within network security? We're obviously facing new challenges now that we weren't 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, so with each of the, I suppose we call them emerging network technology. So so the Internet of Things or the IoT networks would be, you know, an emerging network technology. With each of those, you see different challenges, new challenges. So specifically, with that massive increase in communication, you get a massive increase in network traffic. So everything then scales. So in cybersecurity, you talk about the attack surface and the attack vectors, and that's the how many ways or means an attacker might have to get in or break your device or hack your device or cause damage. So when you increase the number of devices, the number of applications that those are running, then you're increasing the attack opportunities. So in one example, so I mentioned early on, the way of communication is described as a network protocol.
Yes.
You're introducing a new set of network protocols.
Yeah.
And each time we develop, that's essentially, you know, sort of a programming interface, and there's software attached, and then you're introducing vulnerabilities in that. And that's just one angle. So each time you scale up the number of opportunities for an attacker. It's kind of impossible to run network security as we have done to this point. There are already advances taking place in deployments, I mean, and massive advances, I should say. But if you think about it from the way we might attempt to protect our network, so if you're a network security analyst looking at a network and trying to observe the attacks that are happening and then defend against them, that has to become more autonomous, so more automated, also more, you know, bringing in, as in every other domain, essentially machine learning solutions, for example.
Yeah.
So that you can manage the volume of attacks that you're receiving. And some of those are just automatically protected against, defended against.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are, the more severe attacks can be, you know, worked through by individual, by human operators with a depth of knowledge. And that depth of knowledge again brings in both the technical and kind of behavioral skills to look at incident responses and incident intrusion protection mechanisms. But with networking, you have the other aspect, which is that the network operators, so at what we call the core, the backbone, so the likes of your mobile providers would be, say, Vodafone or EE in that, they're actually can be quite conservative. You always talk about the security performance trade-off. Well, network operators have very strict service levels that they have to offer to customers. So if they say they're going to give you, they're going to ensure your availability of your network 99.99999% of the time, then they want to be confident that any change that's made to the network configuration isn't going to break something. That includes an automated change that you might make in response to a security event. So we've got a lot of work to do in sort of developing verifiable security solutions that are we might think from a research perspective, we prototyped it and it's really worked really well. And we think it's a great solution. And it runs against this playbook of different scenarios that an attacker might happen. We've got all these defenses in place. But if we can't be assure the network operator that it actually won't damage their service level agreement, then they're not going to want to deploy it. So
you're optimizing for security, while they may be optimizing for customer experience. And so you need to balance those two things almost.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so that's really interesting. You mentioned things like machine learning and automation and things like that. As this kind of the surface area in terms of what can be attacked from a network perspective, as that increases, you kind of have to rely on automation. You have to rely on the new technology like AI and machine learning, because the attackers and the people using this for nefarious means will be doing the same. So you kind of almost have to keep pace with that. If you're not developing these systems that can respond to threats faster than humans can, then you're going to be overcome by attacks that can be delivered faster than humans can respond. And so what are the kind of exciting developments that you see in networking going forward with that kind of implementation of the sort of next generation of technology?
Well, one linking to what you mentioned about the use of machine learning, so you're absolutely right. We have to take advantage of these technologies, and it is a flip-flop in terms of who's using them. One of the things we're seeing, though, okay, so the attacker might be using machine learning to improve or automate or generate new attack types, right? Mm-hmm. And then we're also using the machine learning in our solutions and our protection mechanisms. So beyond that, in the, if we have an intrusion detection system, for example, where we're looking for specific attack patterns and recognizing those, we can do that faster and more efficiently and potentially better, more accurately with machine learning.
Yeah.
But we also then have introduced something, a tool that the attacker can also manipulate potentially, because yes, they can manipulate the decision that's made. They may be able to manipulate the decision that's made by that machine learning solution. So if it's not, you know, it's not a fixed threshold, or it's not something that's, well, let's say, for want of a better word, let's say obfuscated within the solution, mm-hmm. they can just, you know, they can manipulate traffic that we send to try and change the training of the system and break that. So there is, it's called adversarial attacks and adversarial attacks on networking. We're doing some of that work. That is one thing that there's going to be a lot more emphasis on over coming years. In terms of exciting developments in networking, they're probably only exciting to networking people, to be honest.
It's all back end stuff, and most people are concerned with how fast their phone's mobile connection is.
That is exactly it. So, I mean, most of what we see, well, you know, what we design, develop is behind the scenes.
Yeah.
You know, the network, you know, underpins everything that you're able to do. But what it does mean is that there are a lot of new services that become available. And you've already seen these over recent years. You know, for example, networking baselines, say, from a performance perspective, changes to the networking systems have enabled much lower latency. So you can do gaming applications, you can have 4K video streams, and, you know, just increasing the capability of what you can transmit to the endpoint devices. One of the things that has been a change in networking, sort of fundamental change in networking over about the last 10 years that is still emerging in deployed networks, but it's certainly growing, is software-defined networking. And the network functions virtualization. And there are two aspects that we do quite a bit of research on at Queen's here. And the main thing behind those is introducing programmability in the network. So that doesn't necessarily refer to machine learning solutions, but it's about being able to adapt how the network devices, so switches and routers, those sort of devices, process the traffic through the network. And just by means of the improvement in that programmability, it's about, you know, logically centralizing some of the control of the network, we can improve both performance and security. So it's a new architecture type. It's enabling more services and faster services. It can improve the security. If we do it right, it can improve the security, but it also introduces some security challenges. So there's also research looking at addressing some of those challenges.
Yeah, because as you say, it's a sort of a double-edged sword. Every time you introduce more technology to the solution, you're effectively opening up a new avenue for someone nefarious to use it against you.
Exactly. And in the most obvious one in this case, and there are, you know, solutions to it at this point, but in the first iteration of SDN, which is software-defined networking, the separation of what we call a data and control plane, so data being where the traffic goes through the device and the control saying how it does that, that became a protocol. You know, so the communication between those two paths, which would have been closed in a box in the network that no one would ever see, now you're saying, okay, well, we can write to that. So we can send commands. Yeah. So then if you have that, that's an obvious attack point for somebody else to write to it.
So your solutions just open up more challenges.
Yeah. But I mean, it's all advancing. It's advancing what we can do, how we do things. And I think what's been really rewarding for a lot of you know, behind the scenes networkers over this pandemic, which has obviously been so terrible for many people, is how networks have responded and being available. So I think that has been a challenge for a lot of people, or a benefit at least for a lot of people who have, you know, who sit there day to day making sure that people can do what they want at home and school and work, and rarely recognized. I think that has been quite one small benefit in a larger, challenging scenario.
Absolutely, because it's one of those things that you take it for granted that it will work until it doesn't. When the network goes down, your internet goes down, your Zoom call or Microsoft Teams or whatever it might be, whenever it fails, that's when you think about networks. You don't think about them whenever they're working perfectly and doing everything you've asked for with precision and control. It's whenever they don't work that they become they surface to people's attention. But as you say, there's so many people in the back end of that, making sure that everything works. And not only that it works, that it works safely, it's quite a feat.
Yeah, it really is. I think from sort of an education perspective, I think it's an interesting area now. So there had been quite a decline in interest in networking prior to, say, 10 years ago, let's say. But the programmability and the introduction, the bringing in software into the networking design and development, the deployment, has opened it up to a broader audience. So being able to do things in software environments as emulation tools, that's meant that you can actually show students how the network works and bring it to life. They can run mini networks themselves. You can run your own network in a laptop, so you can actually see how these things work, and you can make it do things. So you can actually see the applications running across your network, your small virtual network. So the advances in networking themselves have, I think, opened it up potentially to a newer new set of students, and then to hopefully to more innovation over coming years.
Absolutely. I can't wait to see where it goes. As always with this podcast, every time I speak to someone, I end up learning something exciting and new about a topic I thought I knew a small amount about. I end up learning an awful lot more. So thank you so much. This has been fascinating.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
That's EEECS. It stands for Electronics, Electrical Engineering and Computer Science. My name is TJ Cosgrove. I'm the Technology and Innovation Officer for the School of Electronics, Electrical Engineering and Computer Science at Queen's University Belfast. Our passionate staff and incredible students are at the forefront of 21st century technology, working in areas like artificial intelligence, data analytics, virtual reality, robotics, cybersecurity, smart grids, and cloud edge computing. But what do these technologies actually do? How do they work? And what do they mean for our future? We break down the complex topics and explain the big ideas with our experts, researchers, staff, and students. This is the EEECS podcast.